Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Robert Hannon. Fairbanks police are reporting a murder-suicide. Police spokesperson Yumi McCulloch says Wednesday the UAF campus child care facility contacted the police department to report Vanessa Reese's children hadn't been picked up.
Around the same time, her coworker had come to the police station to report that she had left around lunchtime and had not returned, and they hadn't heard from her.
McCulloch says in the course of their welfare check investigation, police learned Reese and her estranged boyfriend, Tien Tran, had a history of domestic violence. At that point, police engaged its tactical police team and went to Tran's residence. When it entered, the team found Reese and Tran dead from gunshot wounds. Police say it looks like Tran shot Reese and then turned the gun on himself. Police contacted next of kin, and Reese's children are with a family friend. The village of Allakaket has banished individuals it says dealt with methamphetamine. In a statement Thursday, Allakaket Chief P.J. Simon says leaders from Alotna and Allakaket met Tuesday and voted to banish those it determined were distributors and dealers. Simon says the tribes exercised their banishment power to protect the community and demonstrate zero tolerance. Simon urged those caught up in addiction to seek help. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said Thursday he expects the Department of Justice will step up enforcement of federal marijuana laws. If enforcement is increased, it could collide with Alaska's voter-approved legislation and damage Alaska's new marijuana industry. Spicer says President Trump understands that terminal patients and people in pain get comfort from marijuana, and he pointed out that Congress has already restricted federal policing of medical marijuana.
There's a big difference between that and recreational marijuana. And I think that when you see something like the opioid addiction crisis blossoming in so many states around this country, the last thing that we should be doing is encouraging people. There is still a federal law that we need to abide by.
Alaska Congressman Don Young, in conjunction with three other House members who make up the newly formed Cannabis Caucus, issued a statement Thursday saying they hope Spicer's comments don't reflect the president's views. The congressmen say they're ready to educate the Trump administration on the needs for more sensible marijuana policies. Denali National Park is marking its centennial this weekend. President Woodrow Wilson signed a bill creating the park on February 26, 1917. The park's celebration will include a birthday party at the Visitor Center on Sunday. As KUAC's Robin reports, creating the park took the efforts of conservationists, hunters, and climbers, and represents a compromise of local interests.
It wasn't the big mountain, but the big animals that attracted naturalist Charles Sheldon. He liked the region's doll sheep, but witnessed overhunting by those trying to feed interior Alaska's gold rush. Sheldon sought to protect the wildlife near the mountain and promoted the idea of a national park. Eric Johnson is the park's historian.
Sheldon was in the Denali region from 1906 to 1908, and he returned to New York City, and that's when he pitched the idea of a Denali National Park to the Boone and Crockett Club.
That hunting club, created by Teddy Roosevelt, had a lot of influence. Members embraced the idea, but also had other things on their agenda. It was already an intense period for national park creation in Montana, Colorado, California, and Hawaii. Another park advocate, Belmore Brown, was an artist and mountain climber. In 1911, he almost summited Denali. He also pitched the national park idea.
Sheldon and Brown were not working together until the Alaska Railroad. It was April of 1915. Once an alignment was selected for the Alaska Railroad, both Brown and Sheldon were alarmed.
They had approached the Secretary of the Interior, who asked them to work together with the Engineering Commission building the railroad and draft a piece of legislation to create the park. Historian Johnson says they knew it would have to be a compromise among hunters, conservationists, miners, and the railroad.
You know, I think Sheldon would have wanted a bill that outlawed all sorts of mining provisions, but he knew that was not going to fly for Alaskans.
They then went to Judge James Wickersham, who was the first non-native to try climbing Denali and also a supporter of the park idea. By 1915, Wickersham was Alaska's delegate to Congress. He had no voting power, but he could introduce bills. In April 1916, Delegate Wickersham and Nevada's senator introduced park bills in both houses. A park bill passed in February 1917 and was signed on February 26th. The law called it Mount McKinley National Park, and its wildlife is now protected. But Mount McKinley itself, the highest peak in North America, was not completely inside the 1.9 million acres. In 1980, the park was expanded to 6 million acres and renamed Denali National Park and Preserve. In 2015, the name of the mountain was changed back to Denali. I'm Robin, reporting in Fairbanks.
The new engineering building at the University of Alaska Fairbanks will open its doors to the public Saturday. Visitors can check out the engineering on display lab on the first floor, where construction has been completed. But as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, workers are hustling to complete the rest of the building by the end of the year.
Workers were going at it full tilt earlier this week inside UAF's new engineering building. And project manager Cameron Wolford says that's pretty much how it's been since they got back to work on the structure in October.
So we're about 5 months into a 12-month construction. We hope to be wrapped up by the end of September, and our first classes will be January of 2018.
The pace of work almost seems as if the university's trying to make up for lost time on the project. In fact, construction was put on hold for about a year in the fall of 2015 when the state halted funding due to plummeting revenues brought on by a free fall in oil prices. Wolford, a 1997 UAF civil engineering graduate, says that disappointed everyone involved in the project.
But it's very frustrating to see such a big project, you know, with so much momentum at the state level, be cut off from funding. It was very frustrating, and as an alumni, you know, I hated to do it.
Wolford says he and the contractors worked out plans to finish the outside of the building and keep it warm until the university could find more funding. That came last year when the Board of Regents worked out a plan to raise $37.5 million in bonds to finish the job. But he says the delays pushed the total estimated cost of the project from $108 million to $121.6 million.
The building design has not changed since that first number was put out there. It's strictly inflationary cost, about 2 to 2.5% per year. The multiple mobilizations and all that temporary heating, lighting, everything else we had to use to put the building to bed.
Wolford says the bond generated revenue, along with corporate donations and cash kicked in by the university, was enough to allow it to get back to work on the building, which was intended to enable UAF to meet its goal of doubling the number of engineering graduates to 100 per year.
We did that pretty much right away, and our program ballooned in terms of number of students. So we ran out of space real quick.
The new 119,000 square foot building will free the program from the limitations of the 1970s era Duckering building, where the College of Engineering and Mines is now housed. The as yet unnamed building will house the college, the Institute of Northern Engineering, and the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. It also will provide state-of-the-art facilities for learning about new technologies, such as those used in remotely piloted drones, robotics, and 3D printing. And there's the towering apparatus called the High Bay Test Lab. That's literally the centerpiece of the new building.
It's about 100 foot long, 30 feet wide, and 4 stories tall, so it's a pretty big facility.
Catherine Estes is a senior in UAF's civil engineering program.
We'll be able to do structural testing, seismic testing, whatever engineering testing we want to do.
Christoph Nystrom, a 2016 UAF civil engineering graduate, says the High Bay Test Lab will be a great teaching tool.
Yeah, I think it'll help students really be able to visualize and see what's going on when you apply a load to a beam instead of just seeing it in a computer model or running the calculations on paper.
Nick Mittelstadt is a UAF contract manager and 2010 mechanical engineering grad, and he says he wishes he'd had access to such facilities when he was attending classes in Duckering.
Most of our testing apparatuses were from the 70s. I mean, it's going to be a huge improvement for the students.
If all goes well, the improvements will finally be available to help teach Alaska's next generation of engineers in less than a year. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
And I'm Robert Hannon.